This is IndyCan Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We know that over 120 countries tune in to IndyCan Radio every week. Welcome. We're going to be talking a little bit about you and how you perceive our music. Ember Swift lives in Canada and lives in Beijing. She'll be talking to us a little bit about some of the misconceptions Canadian bands might have about going over to China and making a splash there. We've got Todd Arkell. We'll start with him. He's back from South by Southwest. Some of the bands he saw, some of the impressions he had. Let's kick things off. We've got Billy the Kid on deck, Jets Overhead from Victoria. Here's a song that kind of has a Station to Station by David Bowie feel. I wonder if their producer Neil Osborne had anything to do with that.
We'll be right back.
Todd, welcome back from South by Southwest. How was it? Your first time there?
It actually was my first time there. We've never really had the call to go, but we had three acts that were playing this year, so we went. And literally, I said to my partner, Cam Carpenter, yesterday, I think I'm still exhausted, and it's been like 10 days I've been home.
Well, I mean, that's back-to-back from Canadian Music Week to South by Southwest to recovery. Now, you mentioned you almost didn't go, or this is your first time going. Billy the Kid almost didn't go. What's the story there?
Well, yeah, I mean, a number of years she's been out there. She said, oh, I never wanted to apply because I never thought I'd get in.
Yeah.
And not only was she accepted, she got early acceptance. She was accepted in December, so in the first batch of artists that they announced, and it turned out we ended up playing seven times when she was down there. She was asked to do all kinds of second play stages. We were laughing, going, can you play more than one second play stage? Should this be the third or the fourth? So that was kind of fun. So, I mean, the one day that was totally insane, and I can't even remember. I think it might have even been the Friday. I have no idea. All the days melded into each other. But I went straight from an Amos the Transparent show or session with XM,
yep.
Dropped off at the Hyatt to catch Billy's set where she played, and sitting right behind us was Muse.
Right.
And they're having drinks, getting ready before they go to their show at Stubbs. So there's this whole intertwine of things that are going on. There is literally so much to see and do.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, you start bumping into people all over the place. So here's Muse watching Billy the Kid's set. She's done. She goes off with Jay Sparrow and Rebecca Ramone, two other Canadian artists. They go off to see Jimmy Necco from Hours. I end up in the bar with Brian Houston from UR Artist Network, having a few JD on the rocks for a little while. And then in walks one of his old friends, Tom and Kathy Cochran.
Right.
I end up in their SUV on the way to the Broken Social Scene show, where I end up hanging backstage with Amos the Transparent, who we manage, and Tom Cochran and Dan Mangan and Zeus and Jason Collad and some guys from the Beauties. It was surreal, just an absolute surreal day.
Now, the Beauties, that's an interesting collective. I mean, you were talking about Broken Social Scene, who's a sort of a collective of great artists in Toronto and in Canada, but the Beauties, they're made up of someone from the Dakota. Who else is involved in the Beauties?
You know what? I know Sean from the Dakota, and also Derek Dunham, who plays drums for them, and Derek's, you know, just an absolute amazing musician, plays for tons of people, but it's an interesting story. The band was formed out of what was like a Sunday night jam at the Dakota, where people would get together and they just jam out some songs, and basically all the members came together and it ended up becoming a project.
Right.
So the cool part was, we're standing backstage and we're just hanging out, and Derek walks in, who I know, and we're like, oh, hey, all hugs and hi, a couple of beers. Next thing you know, Kevin Drew says, hey, everybody, we're going to take a break and we want to bring up some of our friends, the Beauties, to play a couple of songs. So they usher them right on stage in the middle of their show, which was absolutely, it was one of the hardest tickets to get in to see it in Austin. They played twice. They played at Stubbs and they played at the Parish, but this was the Arts and Crafts Showcase. It was just rammed. Like, you couldn't even move in this place. So, you know, he brought them up, which was awesome of him to bring them up and introduce them to their fans. And they put on a great two-song set. It was awesome.
And this song we're about to listen to, they didn't even have down there. It's just being mastered. And we'll play some Dan Mangan, and you can come back and tell us more about your backstage experience with him.
Sounds great.
Good looking. might be wearing a green chemise and a hat that she bought, 'cause it matches her jeans and the water she drinks. Well, it comes from the stream by the house she might win in that hospital lottery. And I might be stumbling and cursing them all when she picks me up from the place that we both call disaster relief. For the rent must be paid by the first of the month, or in my case, 15th. This is good. As far as I can tell, it's still heavy as hell when it's good. And I do like the road, but I'd be better at home. I will pine for the oak streets, pine for the cedar. I have chanted and chewed. I have loved my guitar to the nice cafe blues. And when I come home, I am coming home to this street and these avenues. This is but as far as I can tell, it's still heavy as hell when it's good. And I do like the road, but I'd be better at home. I will pine for the oak streets, pine for the cedars and you.
So we just heard some Dan Mangan. You actually take credit for introducing him to Tom Cochrane.
Yeah, that was, it was funny, like totally random. I mean, I'd never met Tom before, and I knew his wife Kathy because she manages an artist by the name of Andrew Cole, who's part of U Artist Network, and we're obviously connected in there as well. And hadn't met him before, and we end up in the car, and just the absolute nicest guy, asking me a million questions, and just, you know, interested in all kinds of things. So we end up backstage, and we're standing there, and Dan comes up. He goes, "Oh, hey," and we're talking, and I said, he says, is that Tom Cochrane over there? And I go, "Yeah, it is." I said, "You want to meet him?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure." And then I said, "Do you want to get your picture with him?" "No, it's okay, it's okay." So for those of you who don't know Dan, he's like, and I introduced him as the world's nicest guy and one of the next, you know, future stars in Canadian music. Like, even during CMW, I met with some people from Australia, mm-hmm. and one of the guys that runs a festival, and he was talking about, "Oh, have you met Dan Mangan? He's the nicest guy." It's like he's got this great reputation. He is just a good person, right? So I introduced him to Tom, and they end up having this awesome chat, and you know, and Dan was quite happy with having that opportunity, and it was great to hear the two of them talk about music and different things back and forth. It was pretty cool. And then afterwards, Tom was like, "Okay, how do you spell his last name?" He wanted to make sure. You could tell he's making notes that he's going to go and check on Dan's music and check him out. It was kind of a cool little Canadian rock and roll moment.
Now, it's great to hear the story, but it would have been great to have that conversation recorded.
It probably would have. If I'd had the presence of mind in the fact that I was well-fueled, shall we say, for the evening, I might have actually whipped out a recorder, but that would have been a little, you know, intrusive.
Yukon Blonde was a complete buzz band at CMW. Did that a momentum carryover going down to South By?
Well, I think so. I mean, it's really interesting. There's a lot of organizations that did a lot of work to promote Canadian acts down there. I mean, XM The Verge, 87, always doing an amazing job. CBC Radio 3, SEMA, which used to be SERPA, but just changed their name, I mean, with Canadian Blast. They had Paradise Cafe, which had the biggest Canadian flag you've ever seen. Like, it was, I don't know, it had to be probably 10 feet wide by 4 feet. It was huge, hanging off the side of it, and that was the official kind of Canada House. And I think there was 75 Canadian acts that were showcasing in various formats that were officially accepted by South. But that's pretty, it's pretty darn good. And that's not including all the rogue stuff like Red Gorilla and all of those things, which are also viable shows as well. So I think it carried over for them.
Yeah, that's right. The Trues were down there. And I mean, the list goes on, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, even Julie Black and Saz Jordan played at Canada House. I was like, that's weird. And not, no disrespect, but it was like, Julie Black makes the comment. She goes, I happened to wander in because Amos the Transparent was playing later that afternoon, just after the Trues. And Julie Black goes, this is only my second time in the U.S. And I was,
wow,
astounded.
That's astounding. Yeah.
I thought, really? I would have assumed.
Yeah.
And maybe they're building her career in Europe or otherwhere. I mean, I don't really follow what's been going on with her, but I still found that rather interesting, to say the least. So, I mean, it was pretty eclectic as far as you could see everything from Plants and Animals to Colorado to Yukon Blonde to Saz Jordan. Imagine that.
That's right. That's cool. So you don't mind being on assignment next year if the gig comes up?
Hey, I'll be on assignment. I think it's, you know, it was told to me that, oh, you've never gone? Oh, well, you're never not going to go now.
Yeah,
And I think they're right. I mean, it is. I went without any definitive plan other than the fact we had three bands that were playing a total of something like 15 times over the course of the 5 days. There was lots of personal things I wanted to see. Some of them I didn't get to see just because the sheer volume, if you... For a Canadian in Toronto, I guess the best example would be take Queen Street from Bathurst to Spadina, picture every storefront a bar, make that seven streets by four cross street blocks.
Yeah.
And it's just every doorway you walk by almost is a venue.
It has music.
Yeah. You know, there's a restaurant maybe, but they might have turned it into a venue.
Yeah.
So it is just... It is crazy. You just basically go where the wind takes you.
Oh, sure. Even the places that aren't in the program, they put something on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, it was incredible. I mean, one of the great sub-festivals down there in South by Southwest hates them is the Red Gorilla Music Fest.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I mean, they hate them because it started out of them wanting to get some artists to play in Austin, and they couldn't get into South By, so they started their own festival. I talked to Brian Waymer, who runs it. He had 475 acts showcasing. 475, and that's not including the South By ones, right?
Yeah.
So, and they had like five venues right in the heart of 6th Street. And I mention it because, I mean, Amos the Transparent played. Jay Sparrow also played.
Yep.
We had a UR artist showcase, actually, one of the nights at a place called the Chuggin' Monkey, which was out of control and a lot of fun. I mean, I had my picture taken with a guy who was wearing a horse's head mask drinking beer out of it. So if you can imagine, that's the type of bar this was. So, I mean, that's a festival within a festival. And then there's all kinds of other, all the day parties and everything else. It's madness.
Okay, now we're going to play some Yukon Blonde, but I think you have to come clean with people about you and sex with strangers.
Great band out of Vancouver. I met them. We went to the XM Verge 87 Six Shooter House of Sins. I get all that stuff in, try to remember all that stuff for all the people that supported it. Six Shooter rents a house down there, and XM does the live sessions. We were out on the back deck, and I saw them out there, and I said to the Leak from XM, I go, who's that? He goes, that's Sex with Strangers. I go, I'm terrified to go out there. So they're a large band. I think they're a six or seven piece, all guys, one girl, and just the nicest people, and really hit it off with them, watched some of their session. It was awesome, and you know, emailed them and asked them to send me some music, and love for you to listen to it.
So this is going to be a new city anthem then?
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. Thanks, Todd. Ha 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 ha
wonder could it be me living the red carpet life? Life would be easy then. A-list parties and famous friends. Live with royalties with random fans. Then I would quit this dead-end job. Move to the city, I won't be forgotten. Post a children and a movie wife in this movie life. And greatest hits, daytime talk shows, and the rich itch provide shelter from this world. Big parties and important friends, fast cars, and there's no end in sight. Pressfield days and tuxedo nights in this movie life. 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 Agents calling like every day. Movies and TV and daytime talk shows. Limos and drivers and Grey Goose chilled on ice. Sigourney Weaver and Robert Redford. Famous instant, how could I plan for this? Poster children and a movie wife. In this movie life. In this movie life.
From the Prairies, Alberta, to be exact, that is Michael Bernard Fitzgerald. And before that, Yukon Blonde and our South by Southwest coverage. Thank you, Todd Arkell. Some great tunes there, don't you think? Wow. Dan Mangan, love that song, Pine for Cedars. I just love the title, but it's a great song, too. Anyway, we got Ember Swift on deck, and I'm going to give you today on this show a segment of the conversation I had with her at Say What, just before Songwriter Circle she did there, about her experiences in China. This is someone who has 10 indie records produced, sold. I mean, she makes a living making music, and who better to go to find out about breaking into the Chinese market? And she won't burst your bubble, but she'll give you some realities in terms of the sort of Western expectation of raping, pillaging, and plundering, and how that's just not going to work on a civilization as old and mature as China. If you want the whole interview, go to IndieCan.com under School of Rock, and I'll have the whole unedited edition there with all my ums, ers, and buts. And it's just like if you were sitting there in the booth at Say What with Amber and me. Anyway, before that, I've got some brand new Canteen Knockout. Andre Skinner, my original co-host, his band on WeWork Records, brand new album. He's got a Gordy Lightfoot cover. He's got Sarah Burton working with her and some other great artists. And, of course, his Canteen Knockout band. And this is, I'm going to just to go with the Canadian theme here, this is Back in the Sun, deep into the album. We'll be hearing a lot more about this album soon. Also on deck from Fredericton, we'll be hearing from Stereo Airing.
is Ember Swift, and we're listening to IndyCan Radio.
Ember, you live in China, you live in Canada. You produce music in China, you produce music in Canada. Mm. IndyCan gets some months more Chinese listeners than American or Canadian listeners.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And that's only in the last year, 18 months.
That's
before
great.
That, they weren't even on the radar.
Hmm.
Just this sudden phenomenon.
Well, I think there's an opening that has happened thanks to the internet that has happened not just for the West, but for all countries of the world to China. So the Chinese people are exploring all different cultures at the moment. To be honest, I feel very humble about being there, and in no way do I feel that I am there to harvest a fertile land, you know. I think there's a lot of notion that because China's an up-and-coming market, it's a rising force, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's the assumption that it will be the world superpower within a decade.
Right.
That it is time now to plant one's, you know, proverbial seed in China's soil, right?
Yeah.
And I really reject that notion, because I think that we as Westerners have, like, occupying a land that was once conquered by imperialism here and colonialization, right? I think there's somewhat of that notion that goes into the desire now to invest in China, and I really reject it. I think it's incredibly arrogant and elitist and frankly racist in many cases, the notion that it's time for we as Westerners to invest in China. And when people, like, I'm not saying you suggested that I am that,
yeah.
But when people think that the reason that I went to China was so that I could get a piece of that pie, I'm really saddened by that assumption, because my interest in China is an interest in China regardless of its status currently in the world market.
Well,
it's a cultural interest. And
as a language, you started studying China like 10 years ago, right?
More. I started studying Chinese in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And then I graduated university in 98. And always wanted to go to China. I always thought, this is my back pocket plan. When music dies for me, it's my back pocket plan. Of course, music's been really successful for me, and I feel really comfortable with what I've achieved as a musician. And then it occurred to me, you know, as I got more mature, that I could go to China anytime, and there was nothing, I didn't have to stop one thing before starting another.
Right.
So I went to China purely as a passionate excursion, as a self-discovery, and as a tribute to a culture I have so much respect and admiration for.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with humility to go and be a listener, to be a learner, because I think of China as a culture that is likened to an ancient sage, and we are just infants,
mm-hmm.
culturally. So I went to really learn from the sage, the cultural sage of China.
So you don't think we have as much to offer them as they have to offer us?
I think we have different things to offer them. Culturally, no. But I think that we have a lot to offer them technologically and
mm-hmm.
scientifically, because China, up until the last century, was a closed door to technological advancement. But they have a lot to offer us culturally and spiritually, and certainly in terms of ancient wisdom,
mm-hmm.
which we, of course, were only a couple hundred years old culturally.
Yeah.
But
hey, Quebec City's 400 years old.
Oh, that's true. That is true. And they're also doing something incredibly brave, and they're merging a communist government with a capitalist economy, and that's never been done before in the history of the world. So it's really fascinating being there, and I, when I am there, I'm definitely not there for personal gain. I'm there to learn from a culture that's got so much to teach. When my friends come and visit, they're staying with me, and I'm taking them around, and I'm acting as their guide and translator. And so I do that for the people I care about already. I think that there will be more of an exchange, and part of my new Lentic project is about trying to create music that can speak to both cultures, so that there can be this can add to the to the bricks that are basically creating the bridge, right?
Yeah.
It's just one brick on the bridge.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of art that's trying to do that right now. Mm-hmm. So I don't, of course, I don't see this Atlantic project as the bridge between East and West, but I hope that artists who want to experience Asia and tour in Asia, and specifically China, will see their artists having that potential as well. And instead of having this notion that they might get big in China and become the next star.
Exactly.
Because that's just, it's unrealistic. Like, it's unrealistic in all countries right now for the music industry.
There
really
right.
aren't Celine Dion's anymore.
Yeah.
They're really
Even
rare.
Celine Dion isn't a Celine Dion anymore.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that she was the best example, hey?
No, but
you know what
exactly.
I'm saying.
I mean, she used to sell 30 million records, mm-hmm. right? I mean, no matter what she put out next, she won't sell 30 million records because it's a more fragmented marketplace.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a riddle these days that is compelling many, many people to try and solve it.
Yeah, exactly, and understand it. You know, I think everyone was sitting and waiting for this new paradigm to take place and be obvious. But it's not. You just fumble along, you know. You're
exactly.
creating art. You don't know how you're going to market it, what form it's going to take. You just create it for the right reasons, and what will be, will be.
Exactly, yeah.
How long has Lentic been out now?
Well, officially it was out in, I released it in May of last year.
I want you to pick a song. Do you have like a sentimental favorite that has grown on you more since you put it on the record than a song that surprised you in some way?
That's a good question. All right, Hollowed Bones. It's the first track on the record.
Mm-hmm. Funky.
Thanks. I wrote it because I was listening to Quirks and Quarks on CBC, right?
Yep.
The science discovery
yeah.
show. And they were talking about how dinosaurs are related to birds. And I think I knew this, but I didn't realize that when the dinosaurs so-called ruled the earth during that time when, you know, dinosaurs were pretty much it for mammals, it was because the atmospheric pressure of the earth had dropped dramatically and all the other animals died. But because dinosaurs, like birds, have hollowed sections of their bones,
mm-hmm.
they had extra oxygen, so they could
yeah.
live in that lower oxygen level. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. So they ruled the earth, but it was like a default ruling, right?
Yeah.
And then eventually they died in the Ice Age. But the whole thing got me thinking about extinction and survival and how we as the human race right now, we are apparently ruling the earth, but we're simultaneously destroying it too. So I thought, you know, how are we going to survive this as a race? The human race doesn't have, this, like our species doesn't have hollowed sections of our bones. We
yeah.
don't have this catch-all that's going to catch us when our environment can't sustain us anymore. But then, by extension, I started thinking about how we as individuals often don't allow our lives to really, really, really live, and
mm-hmm.
often don't follow our hearts, don't live our dreams. Like, we dream about living rather than living our dreams.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great expression.
I borrowed that from somebody on Twitter, you know, so it's not
yeah.
mine. It's not original. And it, so it started me thinking about survival and how really we may not survive environmentally and we as a species may die off, but until then, how about we live our lives fully living and not walking around already as our own personal dinosaurs. So following our hearts, not letting our hearts get trapped in our skeletal cages,
yeah.
all that stuff. So the making of that was really fun because I had written all this poetry and I thought the poetry would sound really fun in it.
Yeah.
And I did all the recording in my home studio in Beijing
mm-hmm.
and I did some of the spoken word, and I'm not a spoken word artist and I hated the sound of my spoken word voice, so I pitch shifted it down. And so the male voice on that song is me.
Wow.
Yeah. And a lot of people thought...
But you love spoken word artists.
I do.
I've seen you perform with Crystal Mullen. And
and she's
okay.
a good friend. And
yeah.
I love the art of spoken word, and I love poetry, but I really think my voice is it's really high-pitched and kind of bird-like and obnoxious. So I'm not really into my spoken voice at all. And when I was listening to my poetry being spoken, I thought, oh, it's just got no attack. And I really can't find the authority in that voice. So I I did the female to male function, and thought, that's it, that's it. My spoken word persona is a man, and I put it on the record like that, and almost no one knows that it's me. So yeah, so if you play that song, then now people will know that all the vocals are me.
Yeah, and is it Mandarin? Is that your other language?
Yeah, okay. That's the language, and the lyrics, the chorus is Mandarin. It's 可以把诗比喻成鸟，凤与孤的结合，可以把诗比喻成鸟，总是想要飞。 And that means the metaphor for a poem is a bird, the perfect combination between wind and bone. The metaphor for a poem is a bird always wanting to take flight.
Wow.
So that's the chorus.
Extinction.
Pacing back and forth between joyful and lost, I am caged. Like a lurking poem nudges a pen, I am not pounced yet, but I want to. I want out, I want flight, I want wild abandon, no fear of extinction, and I will be there, I will be here, I will find the air to float me if I have to, just to see, just to see, just to see if what is written on these bones will come true. Don't let go until it is time.
I know.
Don't let go.
It's coming.
If it's true, fly into me, fill me, hold me up and bite down with your teeth, hold me against your fur, feed on me, don't let go until it is time.
And I will hollow out my bones, and I will fill them up with air. Yeah, I will hollow out my bones, survive extinction.
Don't let go until it is time.
For more information on the artists featured on today's show, visit IndieCan.com.